And a good Tuesday evening to you, and welcome into the Predators season preview show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, and Hal Gill alongside for the next 2 hours talking about the NHL season, fellas, that begins tonight. Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay to get all the action started, followed by Vegas and Seattle in the nightcap. And all of these games can be watched on ESPN. They're back in the hockey business. In fact, we'll talk to AJ Malesko coming up in the second hour because she'll be in the booth with John Buchagras for that Seattle and Vegas game. Guys, how we doing?
Doing outstanding. And we're doing better. I don't know about you, Hal, but I think you and I are doing better than what the five guys on the COVID list for the Seattle Kraken, not to mention their play-by-play guy who's waited all this time to do an NHL game, and he's out tonight.
It's a little scary, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Like, hey, we're going full bore, and then you hear stuff like that. So hopefully that's just a little glitch and everything can get sorted out. Hopefully we see a full – I know those guys are retesting, I believe, Pete. Right?
Yes, they are. Yes.
They're trying to get back into the game, but yeah, that's a little scary. So hopefully it gets straightened out because I'm ready for some hockey.
So am I.
I wonder how it will look on ESPN. They haven't forgotten how to do this, but it is going to be a little bit odd. We've been used to NBC over the years and their outlets, but ESPN, I wonder how different it'll look tonight.
Well, and many of the same people will be involved, just on a different network. And I was looking last night at a tour of the TNT studio, which happened to include Liam McHugh, late of NBC Sportsnet.
And I think it's the impressive roster that they got for talent. You know, it's going to be a little curveball, and I think you know, some fresh blood coming in and a fresh set of eyes to say, hey, let's do a little bit different. It's not going to be the old ESPN. It's been a minute since they've been running it, so I'm excited to see what they have in store. When we were in Tampa, Pete and I saw all the things that they were doing, on ice cameras and the mosquito camera that was flying over the ice. So they're working hard to give different angles. We'll see how it all comes together, though. You know, I like a traditional view of the game, but I know there's a lot of fans out there that want to see the game from a different angle. So it'll be exciting to see how it all plays out.
And Barry Melrose was there with a new haircut too, Darren.
Hmm. Oh, no mullet?
Well, modified.
Okay, 2021 mullet?
Yeah.
So did I just get that description right? How they're going to have the kind of the roaming camera on the wire?
They had it when it was in Tampa, and it drove me crazy because I thought there was a trailer coming into the play every time it would go by. Oh, there's a, you know, it's a 4-on-1. Oh, now it's a 6-on-5, you know. But it was a little distracting. But on camera, I assume it would be pretty cool. So I'm anxious to see how that plays out.
Very interesting. Had David Poile today on the radio show, and he was really, really upbeat about camp and preseason. We saw six games. The Predators went 4-1-1 as they concluded and wrapped things up Saturday afternoon / early evening against the Hurricanes in the 4-3 victory. Your guys' overall thoughts of camp and preseason? Were you just as excited as a GM?
I think that they had, because of, again, that doubleheader, they probably had more practice time than you would otherwise have playing the six games. Not as much practice time as Carolina did, playing just four preseason games. But they got a chance to get in a lot of work. And the first time they've really had the chance to do that preseason for John Hines.
Yeah, I've never been on a team where the GM came out after training camp and said, "Ugh, I just hate this team. This is awful. We had an awful training camp and I don't want the season to start." So you take it all with a grain of salt. And of course, David Poile is excited about the lineup he's got. I'm way more optimistic than I was when preseason started. When I looked at the camp roster, I said, okay, how is this going to play out? I think there's a lot of things to be excited about. I think that Johansson, Duchesne, Forsberg line looks good. You know what you're going to get from Granlund. It looks like Elie Tolvanen is fast and he's in shape. And obviously he's got a great shot. We're going to see Tomasino in the lineup, it looks like, and that's exciting. Tanner Jeannot and Yakov Trenin were just beasts Alexander Carrier looked really strong. Of course, you have Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm back there, but I'm expecting a big year from Fabro. How the D plays out is going to be interesting because there's eight spots and you can only dress six or maybe seven if you want to. But and then you have Juice and net. So, you know, when you look through the final roster and what it's all composed of, I'm excited to see what some of these guys can bring, you know, especially Cody Glass and Phil Myers. They're new to the lineup and we don't know much about them, but I think if they can get a good start and from talking to them and being around them, I think they're pretty excited to be here and excited for that fresh start. So really a fresh start all around, and they can do and make what they want of it.
I don't want to put words in Hal's mouth because he's going to comment on it, but I'm going to start with you, Pete.
Okay.
You've seen over two decades of Predators hockey. Is this one of the biggest teams, if not the biggest roster you've seen?
Well, when you consider the first teams, there was a limbo bar placed over the door to the dressing room at about 5'8". And if your chin ran into it, you couldn't play. So that's a little bit of a different approach back then to now. But yes, this is, in my mind, at least from my first impression, unless my eyes are shrinking, this is the biggest lineup the team has put out there on a regular basis.
I think the exciting part is going to see how big they can play. You know, you can be big, but you. I think this is a team that's willing to go in the corners, that's willing to battle. You know, we saw the Beast line last year, and they kind of set the tone for how the team was going to play, and it kind of spread throughout the lineup. Now, after a summer and a training camp coming back at it, I think everyone feels a little bit bigger. So even if you're the same size, you know, even Rocco feels a little bit bigger playing on this team. And I think that's the mentality that they have to have, that tenacious, hard to play against, physical presence. I think if they go out there and play to that identity that they're trying to get to, that's how they're going to have success. So size matters, but it's also what you do with the size.
Well, and you said it really stood out to you down on the ice with the team for that special Sunday practice where you got to be down there and with those guys up close and personal, something that we haven't experienced the last year and a half. And you said that's what really jumped out, is being down there with them. You realize how big this roster really was.
Yeah, I was over at Vanderbilt at Hawkins Field. They were trying to hit home runs. Some of them were good. Tanner Jeannot was knocking bombs.
Really?
But he was smoothing it out there. He had a ground rule double, which is a sensitive subject these days, but he got one of those. And then he had a couple monster home runs, one that was out of the ballpark completely. So, there's some size there. Just looking at the guys, like, you know, obviously there's some tall guys, but these guys are jacked. They look strong. They look fit. I wouldn't say they're the best athletes. I don't know if they're ready to transition over to play baseball, but you could tell that these guys are big, solid. And, you know, if I'm going out and I just watch those guys walk by the locker room, I'm guessing I'm looking around going, okay, this is going to be a tough night. And I think that's kind of what they're looking for as far as setting the tone with that physicality and that size.
Anybody else look good with a bat in their hands, Al?
It was tough. Jakob Trenin looked like he was chopping wood. You know, I don't think Russia is the place where you're going to see a great baseball game, and it kind of showed. But you know, strong. I mean, he is a beast. We all know that. But I don't know if baseball is his thing.
Okay.
Some smooth swings. Ryan Johansson, you know, I think he's a great golfer, so that translates. It was smooth. But you realize how good baseball players really are when they hit it out consistently.
Yeah.
You're saying maybe if the Predators had a player from Japan, you would probably look for them a little bit more than the guy from Russia when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, a couple of these guys should have just leaned in and taken the hit by pitch, you know? Just move to first. Throw a big lat like Don Baylor used to and just walk down to first.
So, Darren, I'm going to call you Jiro Nakajimaya to come back. And see how he does.
Well, Pete, on our team, what Hal just described, you get an ice cream on our 10U baseball team. If you get hit by a baseball and you don't cry and you go to first base, you get an ice cream. So You know, ice cream works in a lot of, you know, maybe it can work on the professional. Right?
What an incentive clause. Yeah.
Darren, that's because you're the pitcher, right?
No,
you're
not
the pitcher,
anymore.
So when you feel bad when you hit them.
We did have that in place when I was the pitcher, though, which says a lot about me. You're right. That's a good point. You brought up Tanner Jeannot. I always hesitate with a guy with a small window. We've seen just a small sample of them. But I'll tell you what, watching him in preseason, watching him in camp, and seeing that sample that was really, really good last year, it not only looks like he's come back and he's the same guy, I think he's the same guy, but a better version of the same guy. You guys agree?
Yeah, I think he has the confidence from what he did last year to bring forward this.
Yeah, no, I think he's, he said it, confidence goes a long way. What I'll say about him is I think he has that confidence and that skill. But what really the big thing is he's not a skilled player. That skill is just kind of a plus, I think, in the way I see him. He's a guy, he's hit first, and I want to get in on the body and bang and start the forecheck. And so if you get a guy that's going to do that, it's kind of tough to slump, you know, when all you have to do is go in and bang bodies, and he's good at it. So I don't see him slumping, you know what I mean? And if he can get some goals here or there and get some confidence and be a scorer, then that's just icing on the cake. So I'm excited to watch him because he does have that offensive upside. And I'll put Yakov Trenin in that book too, right, Pete? I mean, we're watching him, and he's got some skill plays and can make some, you know, he's in front on the power play. So you have a big body that can go and bang, but you also have both those guys with some skilled hands and that can score goals.
David Poile said today he would like to take back the competitive rebuild comment and call it a competitive transition. And a part of that is more of a rebuild than we would be talking about a lot of new faces, right? And
right.
We're not really talking about new faces. There are very few new faces in this lineup when you think about the guys that we talked about last year and think about how many guys they trotted out on the ice last year because of COVID and injuries. So one of those new faces is indeed Philip Myers, and he's one of those big bodies that we talked about coming over from Philadelphia from the Flyers in that three-team trade with Vegas, Philadelphia, and Nashville. I saw him at Centennial. We did a couple shows out there. He's this big guy. He's got the cage, you know. But overall, what did you guys see from camp in preseason and now moving forward? And I guess he'll probably start with Matias Ekholm as that second D pairing. What do you think the Predators have in one of those new faces in Philip Myers?
I like him a lot, but how you played that position effectively, how do you view him?
Well, I don't want to put him in my category because I do think he's got an offensive upside.
Okay.
I do think the role that he's kind of transforming into here with Matias Ekholm could be more like my game. But I do like the fact that he can get up into play. I feel like he's a good first pass guy. If you want to play that job, that shutdown D role, you got to be able to move the puck quick and get it into the hands of the forwards. And then offensively, I just think in the way that the game is played now, you need to be involved in the rush. You need to add to that offensively. So that's where he separates himself from me. But I'm really looking forward to a night in, night out role where he's matched up with Ekholm against the big lines. And can he be punishing? Can he be the guy that is hard to get to the front of the net? I think he's got all the size. He's got the reach. I do think he has the footwork. It's just, you know, it becomes a hard job when you have to do it night in and night out. And that's where, you know, I realized that early on. You can't have a night off. You know, you can't have a night where someone beats you because – you know, the secret's out on you. You have to prove it against big guys, skilled guys, whatever their top line is, whatever their high scoring first line is, you're going to see minutes against them. You have to be able to handle all different, you know, playmakers, goal scorers, snipers, one timers, whatever those guys are throwing at you. And it's different with every game. That's what you have to be prepared. So it ends up being a little bit smarter of a role than people take for granted. And I think that's something that we have to see how he performs night in and night out. But so far, I love his game and I like what he brings to the table. We just got to see if he can put it together on a consistent basis.
Last thing, and then we'll come back with Terry Crisp on the other side. Pete, I'll start with you because you called his games when he played for the Predators, and he's been in the organization. He's been the Milwaukee Admirals GM. He's been in the front office. He's been helping with player development. And now, this week, the Predators have promoted Scott Nichol to assistant GM.
Yeah.
What does it mean for a guy like Scott Nichol? And I asked David Poile this earlier today, and he was obviously very glowing. The three of us have been around Scott Nichol from his playing days and all through all of this, and he's a great guy to talk hockey with. He knows his stuff, and now it's been really nice to see him develop and just keep moving up the ranks.
Yeah, and I called his game when he was with the Buffalo Sabres too, and Brent Peterson was his coach in junior at Portland. So a lot of us go back quite a ways with Scooter, and we just have – I think what I have seen is his natural intelligence and love of the game just continue to carry him forward into bigger and better things.
What does a guy like that mean? Because you had player development guys, you know, throughout your career, especially early on. What do those guys mean to the younger guys?
Well, it's you know, to be honest with you, it was a relatively new role. You know, like when around the time I retired, there was these guys coming in, and I think it helped so much. I did that in Florida, and you get to be around the players, and you got to help them. It's not just hockey that you're talking about. It's like your life, and you know, how do you go grocery shopping? How do you do that? And I think in talking to Scotty Nichol, you end up becoming like a surrogate father to these kids that are kind of getting tossed away from their family life and trying to transition into the NHL. They don't have all the money in the world. They're playing juniors or they're playing in college and they're trying to get by, and they don't have eyes on them all the time. So you kind of take them under your wing. And that's what I think Scotty Nichol has been so good at, is really investing in the player and learning what makes them tick and how to help them out. And I think that's, especially with the younger players coming in, I think you need that in upper management. It's not like the old days where you can just say, hey, kid, I sent you down, deal with it. Now you really have to manage that. You know, it's not just about pull a guy up or send a guy down. It's how are you going to develop a player? And they talk about it all the time with Phil Tomasino. It's where, you know, how do we do the best thing for him at this time? And Ellie Tolvanen has gone through that, and you have to balance that. And so I think, you know, the transition to assistant general manager is just an easy one for Scotty. And he's a smart guy. He gets the game. He knows how it's played and he knows what it takes to win. So I think it's just an easy move, and I know he's going to do a great job of it.
No doubt about it. You are listening to the Predators Season Preview Show. We'll come back. We'll bring Terry Crisp into the mix and get his thoughts on this upcoming team. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the Predators Season Preview Show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday evening. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, Hal Gill alongside. Let's bring in the man, the myth, the legend, Terry Crisp. Crispy, how we doing?
We are doing great. Listen, I'm so glad you brought me in, because the names you just mentioned, Mr. Gill and Mr. Weber, and very, very nice gentlemen, but it's just about time you brought in some class, so I'm welcome to join you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Terry, for that. It's a good start. Okay, I can see where this is going. In fact,
right downhill.
Oh, you brought class. That's the first time ever that Crispy's brought class. I love it.
I got to tell you, what happened on Twitter last week, I'm just going to say, had me pee down my leg. The GIF that Lindsay Rowley tweeted out with bumping you
her
and Nash's comments, I've got to be honest. I had some warm liquid go down my leg because I was laughing so hard.
I'm telling you, you guys think it's always me. But Lindsay, you got to watch her, because she's a little devious at times, and she's – When she wants to hip check, she knows how to hip check. My arms are black and blue from her whacking me during the games when she gets a little irate at the referees or a few of the plays that she didn't like. So working with Lindsay is a treat, believe me.
You mean hazardous? A hazardous treat?
No, a fun treat.
Okay.
A fun treat where, yeah, but you're right. I got to be on my toes, because she does punch hard. I'll tell you that.
I have to believe you like the way this roster is constructed. We talked about in the last segment about just how much bigger this roster is. I mean, they've got some big bodies. Obviously, the style that they're going to play is completely different than when Peter Laviolette was here. I would say that John Hines' style is a little bit more along the lines of what we saw for a long time with Barry Trotz. This is going to be a workmanlike attitude, and you have to probably appreciate, right, the way this roster looks going into this season.
When you talk to me, skills are Petey.
To Crispy.
You're our guest. I'm talking
okay,
to you.
I've been okay, because I wonder if you're just setting me up on this or not, because Skillsy knows. We've chatted enough times. Pete Weber certainly knows. I've been griping all along that I wanted a bigger, tougher, and stronger team. And I'm going to go out in a branch, and I want a little meaner. Tough and strong is all well and good. But I watched the playoffs last year, and I especially watched the defense corps and all the teams that ended up going in the second, third, and the finals and whatnot. And every team had big, solid defensemen. But you know what they were? They were not only big and solid, but they were mean. Every time they hit you, they just didn't hit you. They wanted to grind you along the board. They wanted to make you part of the net. They wanted to see if they could put you in with the fans. And to me, that's what I want to see in our end zone this year. I'm really looking forward to it. And I hope that Harper and Meyer and whoever else is involved in that end of it bring that, because David Coyle has said, and Coach Hines has said it also, that we want to get bigger and stronger, and even threw the word faster in. So if that's what I'm looking for from our hockey club.
Crispy, there's another expansion team making its debut tonight. You were involved with the St. Louis Blues when they got start, later on the Islanders, and of course later on with coaching the Tampa Bay Lightning. But you talked about mean on defense. I think it's fair to say that first St. Louis Blues team had some mean guys back on the blue line.
You know what? We had the three Plager brothers. Get this one, Barkley, Bob, and Billy. The three Plager brothers come out of the north, and they were as they just, anything that moved, they hit it. If it didn't move, they hit it till it did. And I think back then, Bobby Plager was, he and Leo Labine. Leo Boyven, rather, sorry, Leo Boyven, were two of the best hip checkers in the NHL for catching you in the neutral zone, dropping the hip, and taking you out of the play. Al Arbor played for us, big, strong defenseman that could move everybody out of the front of the net. Scotty Bowman, when he came and built that team, he went for goaltender, Glenn Hall, added Jacques Plante, then defense. And also, Scotty was smart enough to go to teams that had won the Stanley Cup, like the Montreal Canadiens brought in a host of them. So our original team in St. Louis was a mixture of veterans, toughness, skill, and solid goaltending. And I know we were brand new in a 16 league that we're new, and the old six stayed together. But I think we went to the finals 3 years in a row with that team.
Right. So how mean, too, can we add in another guy, Noel Picard, the guy who sent Bobby Orr flying a few years later?
How could I miss him? I mean, he was one that, if there was nothing going on, he'd go to the penalty box and just sort of stare around to see if there's anybody he could put in it. Because he was looking, he's like Skillsy. And you watch Skillsy play. You thought you were safe until you got near Skillsy. And then you felt the blow of what he could deliver to you. That was Noel Picard.
There you go, Skillsy. That's good company.
Yeah, I'll take that company. I like that. But hey, Crispy, I got to ask you. You talked about the team identity and everything, and I know that's important to coaching, and you need to have a team that's going to be bigger, faster, stronger. Everyone wants that. This is the first real training camp that John Hines has had. What have you thought of it, and what do you think John Hines has thought of it, and what do you think of how he's going to take that into the season? He had to make some tough decisions. That's got to be tough as a coach.
It does. And you know what? We've all talked to John Hines, Pete and Skillsy and myself and the rest of our broadcast crews, and he's always been so above board and level with us. And when he said he wanted bigger, stronger, and faster, and I watched training camp, it has been a tough training camp. And the last two practices I went and sat with Pete, actually they were doing like scrimmages and whatnot, and you would have thought it was a regular game. Like I saw three or four times. Now you've seen skills, and I've seen guys actually break out and totally, and you have beat fight each other in training camps, guys that have played together and whatnot. This was close to it in a few of those incidents. I saw the guys chirping the two slashes, three slashes to each other. Everybody knew that some of the jobs were open. Everybody knew that they were required, that they wanted to get tougher and stronger. And if all the workouts I watched, they were working. And the last one I just seen the other day, I mean, Coach Hines had not let up on them. They were working. They were hitting. They were doing battle drills. But it was the same things we're looking for, we talked about all last year. And I think the reason is because this year the guys know that it's competitive. The Coach Hines is in charge. Coach Hines knows what he wanted. They listened to him last year. Finally, they listened to what he and the coaching staff were trying to drill into them in the last part of the season in the first round against the Hurricanes. And they realized that Coach Hines, he's fair, he's honest, but he's also not afraid to pull the plug or put the leash on you or take it off you with certain players and different players. And all the players knew that if you work, you're going to impress Coach Hines. And I'm telling you, every player out there was trying to impress Coach Hines and his staff.
What's your anticipation of what this season is going to look like? What are you expecting from this team? If they're going to get the results they're looking for, what type of play are you expecting?
Probably, you know what I want to see from them? More of but the same that we saw against Carolina in that series. Our guys played hard, and I'm going to say this again, and Skillsy says it, and Pete has said it. When we got the herd line, and I don't care what people say or tell me, the herd line was the turning point of our hockey team. And the herd line, to me, doesn't just sum the guys like Trennan and Janot and Olivier and Sisson, but it embellished the young guys we brought up and the guys we brought in from the American League were hungry and they wanted jobs, and they proved it every time out on that ice. And that's what the turnaround was. Yeah, we say the herd line, but I think the mentality of those young kids that came up here and wanted to stay, Carrier, Davies, go on down the list of guys we tried. Every time they were on the ice, they played hard. And I think that's the switch on the motor that turned this club around. And then, yeah, let's don't forget, the biggest part of that motor was Saros. And everybody said, well, Pecorine, Saros, hey, Saros did what he had to do and did a great job of it.
And he did do a great job after having a difficult start, Terry. So that was a very big part of that season run last year.
And you know what? It's sort of like everything else. He knew he was going to be the number one because Pecorino was at the finishing of his career. And I think he finally realized in his own mind, in his own stead after a few, I said, you know what? I'm capable of this. I can do this. I can lead this team. I can win games for them. Then he went and took that thought that was in his head squirting around, took it out onto the ice, and produced it. And every game, it got stronger and stronger because he got more confidence and more confidence in himself. And now, starting this season, he should be a very confident young man in goal.
Hey, Crispy, I got a question. This is a question that everyone is really asking. Did you see enough out of Forsberg, Duchesne, and Johansson that out of preseason that leads you to believe that they can be productive during the regular season?
Yeah, going to be enough. I saw more than I saw last year. I'll tell you, I saw the hope, I saw the attitude of them. And the one thing I did like was that Coach Hines, obviously, and I haven't been a coach. Coach Hines probably, this is just me speaking, probably. I called those three guys in at the beginning of training camp and said, fellas, you are the guys. I mean, let's be honest about this. You guys have got to be the ones to step up and lead this team offensively and the talent that you guys have on this line. He says, I'm going to put you together in training camp. I'm leaving you together in training camp. I'm going to start the season with you three guys together to lead this hockey club. And if the coach did that, the message started to get through. I've been watching them move the puck around. I've been watching them go to the corners. I watched, and the part that I did like mostly was I saw the old Forsberg that when he had the puck in the corner, you couldn't take it off him. I mean, he had his rear end in front of you. He had an arm out holding you off. He was spinning around, stopping on a dime, going. I saw Johansson and Duchesne making passes and plays that I hadn't seen them make for a while to each other, tape to tape. Not almost good pass, not near the guy, but on the stick. I saw them getting open around the net for each other. All the things that we've been waiting for this line to show along, they showed in training camp. Now all they have to do is just carry that on into the season.
And now do we think that Janot, Sissons, and Trenin can actually be the third line?
You know what? Petey, I'm telling you, don't. They were the first line for me last year in playoffs.
Yeah.
I know I'm out of the thing. People are going to say, Crispy's stupid. I don't care. You know, we're on the air. We're talking. No. I give that for and Olivier. You better keep Olivier. Everybody keeps putting him off to the side. Don't put Olivier aside. He paid the price when a lot of other guys didn't pay the price to make that turnaround, along with Janot and Trenin and Sisson. So he's still there. And I like the fact, because you know you're going to have injuries.
Yeah.
You know we're going to go up against some tough teams, and we're going to. When one of those guys, if Janot goes down or Trenin or Sisson or whoever, the guy, one of the guys to step in and keep the pace would be Olivier. So the attitude was that those guys, they stirred the pot. They made it happen, and they made everybody fall in line and follow them.
Pete Howell and I talked about the new cross-checking, something that they were calling a lot in preseason. They're probably going to continue to stay on top of that, at least early on in the regular season. How difficult that is that as a player, and how do you handle that as a coach whenever they've done things a certain way and now they realize if they do things the way they've been doing them in the past, they're going to be in the box and their team is going to have to kill off a penalty?
You're stupid. You're dumb. If you haven't realized by now what a cross-check brings, and it's not like you're, it's like a great big two-handed axe swing with your stick from your shoulders down to the guy's leg or arms or whatever, they're not going to miss that, and they're not going to let it go, and they've been told that the cross-checking has got to stop. And I fully concur. I think one of the cheapest shots that they weren't calling, you stand in front of that net, and Hornquist, he almost got killed before that rule came in and was being called because of that. I watched Skilzy play in his time. You don't have to cross-check a guy to move out in front of the net. And Skilzy will tell you this. If you just come up behind him with your stick in your hand, lower your stick down onto almost his buttocks or his rear end, and just push against him. Just, you don't have to cross-check. You don't have to make the saw movement or the big movement. Strong enough, just move him out of the way. Put him off balance. Let him know you're there. The cross-check's not, and they're watching it. And where we were bad in the cross-check was when guys were near the boards. And you know they're going to call anything near the boards. So a cross check near the boards, you're going, I'm glad. I'm totally glad that they're stopping and going to cramp slap down on the cross check.
Crispy, they did it to the NHL. They took away hooking and holding, and that used to be my game, hooking and holding. And they said, you can't do that anymore. So I was left with a cross check. And that's what we did then, you know. That was the transition. So now they're taking it away. Are they going to let everyone hook and hold again? Is that going to be back on the table?
I doubt it. I don't think they're going to relinquish that one. They're not going to relinquish that ticky-tacky slashing on the glove, tapping the guy, and the guys now all throw their hands down and ouch, you hurt, embellish it. They're not liable to let up on that one either. But the cross-checking, you know, and you've been played long enough, that hurts, and that puts some serious injuries in the guys. So,
yeah,
it doesn't bother me in the least. They're taking it away.
Yeah, we saw with Kucherov in the Cup final last year. Crispy, thank you so very much. We appreciate the chance to visit with you here.
Gentlemen, I always agree talking to intelligent hockey people and men like you guys. It's just a treat for me. So we will see you guys at the rink, everybody at the rink. So Gilzy and Petey, bring it on. And what are we going to bring as Gilzy?
Hey, we're going to bring the passion, Crispy. Full passion.
I knew it. I knew I could count on you, buddy.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Crispy.
Take care, Crispy.
Becker on the Predators season preview show here on this Tuesday night on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, and Hal Gill. Don't forget the Predators begin their season Thursday night at Bridgestone Arena it'll be the Seattle Kraken coming to town. Yeah, the new franchise will be in the house to start the season. Their one and only trip to Nashville for the 2021-22 season. So we'll get to see the Kraken. The Kraken tonight, later this evening, will be the second game on ESPN when they are in Vegas taking on the Golden Knights. So, of course, you will hear Pete and Hal on the call Thursday night when they drop the puck at 7 o'clock. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. Let's talk about some of the voids and how this team fills some of those voids. Guys that have been here a long time. How about we start with a guy like Kelly Yarncroke, who, by the way, unfortunately was put on the COVID list. Doesn't look like, I don't think he's going to play Thursday against the Predators. I'm not sure exactly how that protocol works, but a guy that was here for a long time, came over in the trade from the Red Wings in the David Legwand trade, a guy that we've called a Swiss Army knife for a long time, where you can just plug him and play him. He can center a line, he can be on the wing, and he's been up and down, whether it's the first line, second, third, or fourth line. Kalle Yarncroke has been your guy, and he's been very consistent over the years. Who fills that void?
And there's several voids created there, Hal. Number one, I'm going to say number one is penalty killing.
Yeah, it's tough. You know what the thing about Kalle is he was so good at everything that I feel like it was no one ever put him in a spot. You know, if you have a goal scorer, you're like, oh, he's got to be top six. He's got to be there the whole time. You can't move him. You know, and poor Kalle just got tossed around and put into so many, like you said, penalty kill was huge. And power play, he was on the half wall for a little bit. And so he never really stuck with one spot. But what a luxury it is as a coach to have a guy like that. So that's going to be missed. But I do think there's a lot of guys that, especially going through training camp and watching guys kind of, you know, I think Hines was tinkering around with seeing who's going to fit where. And, you know, I do see Cunning as kind of sliding into that role. And I like the way he's looked. I think he's maybe a little bit better of a shooter, and we'll see if that translates. But I feel like he kind of falls into that role where Kalle was.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Kalle could even take draws. He was just really consistent over the years. I think that's what really stood out to me. It's just a guy that was very, very consistent. You knew what he was going to bring week in and week out, year in and year out, right? It pretty much looked the same throughout his career here in Nashville.
And here is the guy that the Predators got in the David Legwand trade going back a number of years from the Detroit Red Wings. And no, he didn't score like David Legwand, but I think he did a lot more things overall for the club, where it is not easy to say one player replaces what he did here.
Yep. Good point. All right, how about a guy like Victor Arvidsson, a guy that had the offensive scoring punch, was a fan favorite very early on. You know, the fans wrapped themselves around little Victor Arvidsson, but now Victor Arvidsson is out in Los Angeles. How do you fill that void? Because when Victor was upright and healthy, guys,
yes,
he certainly could help this team, you know, score goals. There's no doubt about it.
But that was the key, his health, and certainly was to his detriment the last couple of years. But, yes, his jump screens, and, of course, he had to do that, didn't he, Hal? To really screen the goaltender.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the jump screens. I always wondered what that was all about. It was a little bizarre. But it worked somehow.
Yes.
Somehow it worked. But, yeah, you know what? He just lost the speed on his fastball. And I feel like he's got to kind of retool his game. And so a fresh start is going to be good for him. Hopefully he can get, like you said, get healthy and get back up to speed. And he'll have a great career going forward. But leaving that void, I think that safety blanket and that comfy pillow that was Jofa is gone. And I think that's kind of maybe a good thing. I feel like the Preds rode Jofa for a long time. And having Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson, you can always count on that. How many times did we, when they got broken up, you said, hey, we can always go back to Jofa. And I feel like that was a safety net, and that's gone. And so I think there's a full-out battle to be considered a top line. And, yeah, you could look at Duchesne and Joe Hansen and Forsberg as a top line. They have to prove it. You know, they're not just going to get the benefit of the doubt because they've had success in the past. there hasn't been success with those guys. They need to prove it. And I think everyone in the rest of the lineup, if you look at Mikael Granlund, I'm sure he's looking at it saying, hey, I want to be the top dog now. There's no top dog. I want to push these guys to be better, or else I'm going to take their first line minutes. And so I think that goes up and down the lineup. I think you get a little more juice out of everyone when there's not that first line that's apparent. And I think having Arvidsson gone, I don't think you fill his role with one person, but I do think there's a competition, and that's the healthy competition that John Hines wants.
Well, those are some really, really good points. I agree with that. And, you know, going back to something you said at the beginning part, whenever you lose something, and that happens in all sports, it's not just in hockey, but it happens to athletes. How do you get that back, Hal? You talked about him, you know, maybe, like you said, a little bit. You see that as the Major League Baseball playoffs are going on, you know, a pitcher that's lost a mile or two per hour, and that changes, right, how his approach as a pitcher. Maybe he doesn't have the same speed that he's had the bulk of his career. How do you change that?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the NHL is all about finding where you fit in and how you can play. Arvi came into the NHL, and he was a speedster, right? He was quick to get on someone's hands and disrupt the play and just a dynamic forechecker, and that's where he kind of made his way. And if you lose that speed, what do you become? Can you become a smart player? I always laugh because I was in Toronto and I had a season, a career high, I think 6 goals that year or something. And it was all the while I had an excruciating back pain. It was awful. The whole season I had awful back pain. I couldn't skate, but what I could do is pick my head up and move the puck quicker. And so, you know, I was looking for, I wasn't necessarily skating to get to a spot because I couldn't skate all that well, but I had my head up and I was moving the puck quickly. And if there's a shooting lane, I was shooting it through, and it wasn't a big slap shot because I couldn't move my back, but I found a way to deal with it. And, you know, offensively, my numbers were better than they ever were. And so when you do have injuries, you got to go through the process. I remember Brad Park when he had blown out knees. He always told me that the game was a lot easier when he had blown out knees because he knew he didn't have to skate up and down the ice. He just had to move the puck quickly. And you had good players around him, and you move it to them and let them do all the work. And so I think there's something that needs to be learned when you're in the NHL. If you can't be a goal scorer because, you know, maybe you're a goal scorer in junior in college, you get to the next level, you better find something else to do, whether that's blocking shots or taking hits or playing a good defensive role. You just have to tailor your game, and that's the challenge. It's not easy because and RV's going to go through that. He's going to go through that. If he doesn't get his speed back, he's going to have to do something different to stick around.
So in 06-07, you had a 6-goal campaign, basically shooting change-ups?
It was just wrist shot. I used to – hey, Pete, you know, like, get me the puck, and I would pull it to the middle, and I would shoot as hard as I can. Think of, like, the P.K. Subban, scratch the ceiling with your stick and take the biggest clapper you could. And more often than not, these guys are crazy. They'll go and jump and block your shot, and if you give them time to do it, they'll jump in front and block it.
Right.
Well, I didn't have the luxury. I just picked my head up, look, and quick little wristers. And, you know, through a screen, however it went in, they don't ask how they go in. They just ask how many. And that was all when I actually had a broken hand for half of those too. So, you know, it just is sometimes when you simplify your game and you do things a little differently, you get better results that way. And so I think that's part of learning the game and learning what you're good at and how to be better.
Agreed. And so I'm sure you want to talk as well, Darren, about the gap that is on defense with Ryan Ellis's departure.
That's exactly where I was going. Pete, you've called a lot of his games over the years. He was drafted by this franchise 11th overall in the 2009 draft. We've been watching Ryan Ellis out there on defense for a long, long time. How do you fill that void?
Well, I think, number one, Hal, don't you think it's fair to say that the impulse to trade Ryan Ellis had a lot to do with salary cap implications?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I think everyone in the organization, safe to say everyone, loved Ryan Ellis and would love to keep him around. When you're doing a competitive rebuild and you have older players making big money, yep. You got to move something to try to open up for someone else. And I won't lie to you, I think Carrier playing as well as he did, I think David Poile said, I can make this guy work. And I've been impressed with him.
Yeah.
And coming into preseason, I think this guy's legit. I've talked to, Roman Josi. I talked to him a little bit. I said, looks like you might play with him. What do you think? And he said, he should have been in the NHL a long time ago. Every time he's coming to camp, he's been impressed by him. He said he's a great skater. I love his aggressiveness, the way he challenges in the neutral zone. He's not a guy that's going to back in. He's going to be aggressive and make plays. And I just think I don't think it's as easy as saying he's just going to fill in for Ryan Ellis. But I'll tell you what, he's not that far off. I've been impressed with him. So I'm anxious to see how that plays out. And if he does, in fact, fill that void.
That's a really good point. You're right. I got a chance to catch up with Roman Josi Friday at Centennial, and he did say that, Skillsy. He's like, man, I've been saying for years, this guy is really good. He would come into camp and be around these guys and then obviously get shipped out. When it was time to whittle the roster down, Roman said, man, I've seen it for years. So that is impressive, and now he's going to get to play a lot of minutes alongside a top elite defenseman in the league night in and night out. And we'll see how that goes. We'll do this. That'll do it for hour number one here on the Predators Season Preview Show. When we come back, we'll continue on. Also, AJ Malesko, who will be on the call in the booth tonight, Seattle and Vegas. Doubleheader on ESPN right now as Tampa and Pittsburgh are underway. The NHL season is upon us, so she'll join us in the second hour as well. You're listening to the Predators Season Preview Show right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hour number two, Predators Season Preview Show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday evening. Hope everybody's having a good night. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, and Hal Gill. Pete and Hal will have your call Thursday night when the Predators kick off their season. A 7 o'clock puck drop at Bridgestone Arena when the Predators host the Seattle Kraken. Yes, the league's 32nd team. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock from the Patron Platinum Club. Guys, let's talk a little bit about, let's start in between the pipes, UC Saros. No 35. It's going to be strange. It's already been strange, right? Not seeing the Big Finn out there. Pekka not in the mix. He's retired. Not going to be the backup. Not going to be a starter. This is UC Saros' team in between the pipes, and he's been really, really good. It's not like there's a small sampling of UC Saros. We know what he brings, and right now it seems like the only knock is for him to get off to a little bit better start. It's a long season. Thank goodness we're talking about 82 games. It's a full season. But truly, how much stock do you guys really put into having a better start? If you don't get off to the greatest start in the first month of the season, is it really that big of a deal? I don't know. You guys tell me.
I think it is when you take into consideration how many of these early games are at home. I think that probably puts a little bit more pressure on.
I guess I have a different mentality on this. I didn't really care. Obviously you want to have a good start. Right. I mean, like,
it's a good idea,
but it's a team game, and I think Juice has had rougher starts because of the way the team played in front of him.
Yes.
I thought he's had success when the team has played well. In other words, I think the team that we're talking about, if they're bigger and they're faster, I think they're going to clear the nets a lot better. I think they've dialed in their defensive zone coverage. I think that's going to make a huge impact on Juice's game. If Juice can see the puck, he can make that save. The problem comes into play when, because he's a smaller goalie and there's a ton of traffic around him, then that becomes it's a lot harder to stop pucks that you can't see. And so I think starts are going to be, the start of the season is going to be very much dictated by the way the team plays in front of them. Because I don't see anything different in Juice's game. You know, I don't think he was ever giving up soft goals. I think the team was giving up soft goals.
Yes.
And that's the difference I see. So I have full confidence that Juice will have a great start and play. I see no reason why he wouldn't pick up where he left off, and he was lights out. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. The question is going to be how much wear and tear you want to put on him.
Yeah.
And how many games can he play? I mean, this is the first year. You said everyone's sad because Pex is gone, but he's got the bull by the horns now. There's no other show in town. It's his. And can he fill that? I don't know. How many games are we looking? Now we got a full season. We're not shortening the season down. We're going to be traveling. We're going to be going through a lot. It's not going to be the same travel schedule that we had last year. It's going to be tough. And so how much wear and tear can he take?
Yeah, so what do we think is fair? 55?
It's a good point because it's not a matter of just back-to-backs anymore, right? These goalies do not – they just don't have the same workload than, let's say, Hal when you played.
Yeah. No, and you say 55, Pete. That's a lot. That's a lot for a first year.
Sure,
you
know? It is. And that's the thing.
The problem is going to be is when if he is lights out, how do you take him out? That's the hard part. We are under, and I think it's pretty safe to say we're not a shoe-in for the playoffs. We are going to fight for every point that we can get, and so it's going to be tough if he is playing really well to say we got to give him a night off. And so I think 55 games would be a lot, but if he's playing well, it's going to be hard not to play 60 to 65. I think it's going to be hard. So at some point that you say, okay, we just can't do it. But I do believe John Hines, if Juice is playing the way we think he can and the way he wants to play, it's going to be hard to take him out. So that'll be an interesting dynamic as the season goes along.
Yeah, quick look at the schedule indicates 11 back-to-backs. That was one part of the easy portion of the answer to that question.
Yeah, I don't think he'll start 70 games. I feel pretty good about that. Just to put it in perspective, 35 starts is the most he's ever had in his career, and that was last season. 35. So, yeah, what is the – and that is an interesting twist to this because you both have seen it. You know – especially under head coach John Hines, whenever UC Saros has been playing really, really well and he gets in those patches, those windows where he starts pitching shutouts, back-to-back shutouts, and he is just shutting the opposition down, they ride him, right? They don't tend to give him a night off. And if he's in one of those stretches and that stretch goes on for a good while, it's got to be tempting just to keep the hot hand out there.
Well, that's what Barry Trotz used to say with Pecorino. He's going to ride him like Seabiscuit.
At some point you say, okay, we got to back off because it just, you can't kill a guy. But yeah, you're right. You got to ride him if he's hot. And it'll be interesting seeing how Rittich works out. He's a guy that is, you kind of know what you're going to get out of him. And hopefully he can go in there. I'll tell you, it's important. It's not just something that you should overlook. You need to have a goalie that can come in, and you don't need them stealing games, but you can't have a goalie go out there and lose games for you. That becomes a backbreaker and then just puts that much more stress on a goalie that's already stressed out enough.
Okay, what do you think the Predators have? They've had the luxury of having UC Saros as their backup basically throughout all this. Well, Pecorine was the workhorse starter. What do they have in David Rittich, who's a 29-year-old goalie, hasn't played a ton of the 19-20 season in Calgary? He did play a lot. I think he started almost 50 games. That has been a real luxury here, is being able to depend on that backup. What do you think they have in David Rittich?
I think that's what you have, is a dependable guy. He's going to go out, and I do like it. I like him back there. I think he's solid. I don't think you expect him to go out and save and like get the big win for you, but I do think you can count on him to make some saves and keep you in games. And that's all you're looking for. And, if Juice goes on a heater and you can put Rittich in there and hopefully, play a solid game and let the guys continue to be the killer becomes when, someone goes in, a backup goes in, and then, you know, you start to, you lose steam from your team. And that is, you need to continue that momentum from the top dog. So that's where I thought it was pretty awesome watching Juice and Pex play together, is because they kind of fed off each other and challenged each other to be better and better. You know, who's going to win this crease? And I think that little competition that they had made them both better. And so I don't know if we're going to get that. It's going to be a different scenario for Juice, that he's not fighting for a job, but maybe Riddick can go out there and kind of give him that push from behind that says, hey, I'm going to play well here too. Wouldn't that be nice to see?
Wouldn't it? And he has played upper 40s in his career, a couple of seasons in Calgary, and played very well right under those circumstances.
Yep, no doubt about it. So let's talk a little bit about, we've talked about the first line and what they're looking to get out of that first line with Johansson and Duchesne and Forsberg. We've talked about that fourth line with Sissons and Jeannot and Trennan. And, gosh, that could be the best fourth line in the league if you look around the league. But what about the middle six? What do you guys think there? Because there's some unknowns in there on that second and third lines. If indeed it looks like it was in the final preseason game where Mikael Granlund is centering that second line with Tolvanen and Cunnan on each side, and then Cody Glass, new acquisition from Vegas, centering that third line with the young man Tomasino and the veteran Nick Cousins. What do you think they have in that middle six?
Possibilities. That, and they have to be realized. But, yes, I do see good possibilities there.
I agree with you, Pete. That's a great way to put it. There's an upside there. That's the fun part. I think Granlund should push to be a first line center, and maybe not scoring wise, but all around game. Like, he is tenacious on pucks. He's fast. He is a workhorse. So you put him with Tolvanen, and if Tolvanen can get on a heater, I feel like if he can start to get comfortable playing with a guy and get some chemistry, especially with Cunning, that you have two good shooters there on the wings, I think that line could be deadly. I think they could be a lot of fun to watch. And we saw glimpses of it, just the quick plays out of the corner to a one-timer. I think that's those kind of plays we could see a lot from them. And then that, if you call it the third line, whatever you call that, Glass with Cousins and with Tomasino, I really think that we don't know anything about that line. And that's right. The awkward part, but there are a ton of possibilities. Like, if Tomasino can even get close to the way he was playing as development and the way he's gone and playing last year, he's looked good. He's a pure goal scorer. He can make plays. Can he bring that on a night-in, night-out basis? I haven't seen it yet, but I know there's glimpses of it. I do love the way Glass sees the ice. I think as a centerman playing with Cousins, I think Cousins will create a little room for them. And you know, he's going to be chirping and pushing guys' buttons and getting under their skin and in and around the crease. So I think if Glass can kind of use that vision and Cousins can make some space for them, then I think you're going to see Tomasino and Glass maybe have that chemistry. But that's all possibilities, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm hopeful for it.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I got a chance to speak with Cody Glass recently, and I never really had thought about it that way, but he talked about how excited he is to be here, just a change of scenery. And I'm thinking, gosh, here's a 22-year-old guy. You know, he didn't play. I think he played just over 60 games in Vegas over a couple of seasons. Like, you know, why is he so excited to be in a new place? And he talked about shedding that label that he got, trying to shed what they constantly talked about, which is only natural, to being Vegas's first ever draft pick, right? Yeah. The sixth pick overall in the first round in that 2017 draft. And he talked about how he kind of wanted just to get out from underneath that shadow and that discussion piece that always surrounded him in Vegas of, oh my gosh, he was the first ever draft pick, the sixth pick overall by that franchise. And obviously, you know, he didn't have the explosion to his career that he wanted to out there, and how he's so looking forward to that new start and really kind of that storyline going away here.
mean,
I think that's important. Yeah, sorry, Pete. I think it's important that we talk about guys reinventing themselves, and yes, you go to a fresh start and you become the player you're meant to be. And sometimes you get pegged as who you're going to be and what you're going to do, and it's hard to live up to that. And so having a fresh start and fresh eyes on you, and you can go out and be yourself and make your own plays and be the player you want to be and you need to be to be successful, I think that's a huge thing. It happens way too often, to be honest with you, is that you get pegged as you're this draft choice or you're that draft choice. You know, like, you know, I was a late round draft pick. So when I was trying to break into the league, it was like, wow, this is a surprise. This guy is a late. I'm looking around going, I was drafted 5 years ago. You know, like that, time has passed. I'm a different player than when I was drafted, you know, and I've learned some things. So give me a chance. And the same thing goes for a first round draft pick, because, you know, I'm not the same player that I was when I was drafted. I'm morphing into who I'm supposed to be, and don't expect that, and don't have those expectations on me. Just let me go play my game.
Pete, you've seen that all too many times. Guys have had their second chance here, right? Yeah. And some have made it work, and it worked out great with that kind of that new environment, that new place, new location. And then sometimes it doesn't. But that's what's really intriguing about Cody Glass. He's young. He was a high draft pick. There's been a lot of hype over him. And now he's got a fresh start in Nashville with the Predators, and you do wonder, what is it going to look like now that he can kind of shed all that talk that he got in Vegas and kind of start fresh here?
I have two favorite fresh start stories
from
the expansion Predators. And one would be a guy who had only played one period in goal in the NHL. His name was Thomas Vokoun, and he gave up 4 goals in one period at Philadelphia. Came on here, and he played pretty darn well. Matter of fact, the Canadiens wanted to get rid of him so they wouldn't have to lose a goaltender the next year's expansion draft, and they gave the Predators Sebastian Bourdelot to take him in the expansion draft. And the other guy would be Kimmo Tiiminen, who was able to skate off the ice his last NHL game carrying the Stanley Cup with Chicago. Mm.
And I've got one that didn't work. The fresh start was Devan Dubnyk here. Those two starts didn't go well.
Yeah, but he did have a good start after he left.
He certainly did. Yep. He had quite the career after he left here. I saw those two starts, and I was like, I don't think this guy's got anything left. Well, I was wrong.
I think he got burned out behind that very open, wide open Edmonton defense.
Yeah, he did. But, he made it work in Minnesota. Yes. There's no doubt about it. All right, we'll come back. Friend of yours, Hal, I think you know our next guest pretty well. AJ Malesko. She's going to be in the booth tonight for the nightcap, the doubleheader, as the NHL season is upon us. The Vegas Golden Knights hosting the Seattle Kraken, the team that will be here on Thursday evening. We'll talk with her next as you listen to the Predators season preview show right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the Predators season preview show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, and Hal Gill here on this Tuesday evening. Don't forget, the Predators begin their season Thursday night at Bridgestone Arena as they host the Seattle Kraken. Yes, the league's 32nd franchise, and that's how the Predators will kick off their season. I'll have pregame for you at 6. Pete and Hal will have your call when they drop the puck at 7 o'clock. No stranger. We've talked to her over the years. She does a tremendous job. And speaking of ESPN, part of the coverage tonight as the season begins, the doubleheader on ESPN tonight will be out in Vegas as the Golden Knights host the opponent of the Predators on Thursday night, the Seattle Kraken, to kick off their season in Vegas. And AJ Malesko will be in the booth with John Buchagras, Ryan Boucher, also a part of the broadcast. AJ, welcome to another season of hockey. In two, this is going to be interesting just to see how all this plays. ESPN hasn't been in this game in almost 2 decades, and they're back, you know, airing hockey, and it all starts tonight with your game, or at least the second game for the season.
Yeah, it starts up tonight, and thank you, by the way. Thanks for having me. Always fun to visit with you guys, all my friends in Nashville. I will actually be down between the benches. Boosh and Buchagras will be up top, and I've actually never watched a game from T-Mobile Arena. I've never been here, but been to T-Mobile Arena before. So I'm pretty excited about watching the show that the Vegas Golden Knights put on. And of course, the first ever franchise game for the Seattle Kraken. We do have a nightcap, tonight after the banner raising in Tampa between them and Pittsburgh. So it'll be great. I mean, I love that the league has set these two up, right? I mean, Vegas coming in after their record-breaking run 5 years ago, their expansion year, and now they've got a little chip on their shoulder because they certainly don't want to see Seattle mess with any of what they the records they set in their inaugural season. So I like this lineup.
You know, we were so accustomed to the coverage on NBC for so long, and now that it's on ESPN, I mean, is it going to be some familiar faces, which is really nice, like yourself and Boucher, and of course Buchagras, to see or hear him doing the game, that's fantastic. But what might or maybe some twist we can look for as ESPN starts up a new relationship back with the National Hockey League?
Oh, well, I'm really excited to be a part of it. I feel very fortunate that I landed here. I'm forever grateful to NBC for giving me the start with NHL coverage, and I still have great friends there. And it was sort of bittersweet, really sad to see them lose the rights to this. But yeah, I mean, you got Brian Boucher, who's I've worked with a lot. I'll work with again tonight. And when you mentioned Buchagras, I mean, he's done the NCAA hockey forever.
Yes, he has.
He's done hockey a lot, and so many of these personalities at ESPN love hockey, and there is so much excitement, anticipation. I mean, just the energy around the whole network and everybody having hockey back and, you know, bringing the music back. That seems to be the big one, is that, you know, NHL on ESPN music, that theme music that everybody's excited about. So that's coming back. And I think that it's tonight our studio here on site will be Linda Cohn and Kevin Weeks. So, you know, there are some great people that I've worked with before, either at NBC or other places, but also some people that I've watched before that I'm super excited to be a part of. Steve Levy, somebody that I've gotten to know, but I've never worked with. So it's going to be great. I, in terms of new things to look for, I mean, it's hockey's hockey, right? So we're here to present the game, and I'm hopeful that the games we watch are entertaining in and of themselves, and we are able to present it in a way that people enjoy. But, you know, I think there's some new camera angles. They're trying to make it a little bit more, have the people at home really feel the speed of the game. And they're trying to do that through camera angles, some of the technology that they have. So, you know, I think it will be a work in progress to see how people react to it, because there's always going to be the traditionalist. And I put myself in that category, that I'm just used to certain camera angles. This is how I watch and consume my hockey. And then once in a while you see sort of these new camera angles, and it's fun. You know, you get a camera out there on the ice during shootouts, for example, and they can follow the play. And so I'm excited. I think that there are some really creative people giving us the game.
We know it's been different the last year and a half, AJ. And so it's another nice part of this is getting fans back in the stands. You know, you in the building calling it. Pete and Hal are going to be on the road this season with the
Yay!
Predators.
Sorry.
We know it's been different, but how nice is it to kind of see things starting to feel normal again, starting tonight and with the crowd, and it'll be the same way here Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take a building like Bridgestone Arena for you guys. You take a building like T-Mobile. I mean, there are certain buildings that are just known for their energy and known for sort of the vibe that Smashville brings, for example, with you guys. I mean, I love the playoff runs that I was able to cover your Predators. It's such an amazing atmosphere in there, and you get the whole, you know, the outside thing too. And so to be able to have fans back in full, I mean, I know that we've been, you know, the league has been dabbling with it, but to have the fans back in full, I mean, I really think you guys should just keep Hal at home, though. I think he really enjoys staying home and watching games on the monitor. And, you know, I think he's getting to the age, getting sort of old, so I just don't think you should trust him on the road.
Well.
Don't do that to me.
The floor is yours.
How is it, though? I you know I need my pasture. I can't be caged. You know that. So, but... How was it being around? Like, I'm excited to get out there and get on the road and be around the players. And you know, I think you talked to the coach this morning. You talked to Hacksaw. Like, are you able to go through a normal, you know, normal research like you normally would?
Yeah, you know, it did feel sort of normal. You know, the Knights practice at their practice facility. So we only saw Seattle skate. Because of this recent COVID scare, we were actually not allowed. They sort of locked us down a little bit. The expectation was that it would be much more normal. But they, you know, they had a little room set up for a press conference, and the players came. You know, we talked to probably three or four players who were paraded out and talked to us, and we were able to be in the room with them, you know, 6 feet back, no stanchions or anything up like that. masks on, of course. So it felt very safe. And, you know, it's interesting, even for me being down between the benches, I am vaccinated and I had to provide proof of vaccination, but I'm not, you know, I think the whole that they're testing people as needed, but it does feel more normal, to your point, Hal, that you can come and go, like, go watch the morning skate, talk to at least some of the players. We weren't allowed in the room. I don't know. I think that might be team to team. Different teams are allowing different things. And yeah. As some of you guys know, I work part-time with the Islanders, and I know that they are sort of more locked down, and that may be more a factor of just Lou Lamoriello likes to – he's got a great reason to just keep arm's length from the media. But it is – you know, it did – I agree with you. The energy of being there, being in the arena, there is so much to be said for watching a game live as opposed to on the monitors. I mean, all of us had to do it, and it was a – one of the things that we had to deal with during COVID, but it's pretty exciting to be back at it.
I have to ask you about ESPN with everyone that they're bringing into this lineup for broadcasting. You have guys like Mark Messier and Chris Chelios. Are you going to be working? Are you going to be around them? How's it look for you guys working with them? I know Chris Chelios, and I met Mark Messier, and he tried to break my wrist. I just can't imagine him being like not burly and nasty, but I've heard he's a great guy, and it's got to be cool to work alongside those guys and build something with ESPN.
Well, hopefully he won't try to break my wrist if I work on the on.
I wouldn't trust him, AJ. Just be careful.
They are great guys. We all got together in Chicago a couple weeks ago during the player media tour and hung out a little bit, and really warm, great guys, excited to get going. It is fun for me. I mean, the hockey fan in me comes out too. I mean, I've met both of those guys periodically throughout the years, but you know, it's amazing when you think about who they are, what they've done for the game. And so I like, that's a really fun side of it. But for me specifically, I will be, so far my schedule, I only have through the 2 months, I'm going to be in arena, but my contract also allows me to be in studio in Bristol. So I may be with those guys. I may be doing, you know, pregame, postgame, intermission shows with them. Don't forget John Tortorella. He's going to be in there too. I mean, they've got quite a lineup of some personalities too. So I'm a little taller than Torts though. So we'll see how that one goes.
Well, I got to tell you, if you're with John Tortorella, you got to bring up what he and his wife do working with dogs. I mean, they are tremendous with that.
You know what? I will tell you, the first time I met John Tortorella, I had heard he loves dogs, and I have a dog. So I buttered him up with that initially because I was so scared of him. And I told him, I showed him a picture of my dog. He showed me pictures of his dog. He actually went to the high school in my hometown where my daughter currently is a senior. So we bonded over that, didn't even get to hockey. And I left there feeling like it was a major success. And then I realized that I didn't ask him a single thing about the Columbus Blue Jackets, but he didn't yell at me. He didn't bite my head off and he didn't walk out. So I got him to smile. I felt like it was a win. So all in, my lesson there is he's actually a really good guy. And the dog thing, I agree with you. It's pretty awesome what he and his wife do.
Yeah, it is obviously incredible what he has done there. And if you ask him an honest question, he's going to give you an honest answer, just as long as your name isn't Larry Brooks.
So I had to interview him in between, in the game, too, which was a very scary proposition.
Yes.
And everybody said, no, he's fine if you ask a good question. I said, that's a big if, though. In the moment, I'm so scared. What if I ask a dumb question? And, I mean, I know Hal doesn't believe this, but it's been known to happen. I can ask a dumb question. And it actually all worked out, but it was one of those, it was a really, in like the 4 minutes leading up to my interview, my producer said, there's something wrong with your audio. You haven't said anything. I said, no, I'm sweating right now. I'm so nervous for this interview. I can't analyze this game.
What are we going to see? You've done preparation for Seattle for tonight's game against Vegas. Obviously they've got some guys on the COVID list. One former Predator, Callie Yarncroke, is one of those. Unfair expectations to think that, you know, they can do what Vegas did. To duplicate that is a lot of pressure for a brand new franchise. But what should we expect from the Seattle Kraken team, in your opinion?
Well, good. Let's bring it back to hockey. All right. So this is you get us back on the rails here. It's interesting you bring that. So Callie Yarncroke's in. He is in 10-day protocol, so he won't be in Nashville for the opener with you guys. At least that's what we're hearing now, which is too bad for him, obviously, and for you guys not to see him. So it is. You look at this lineup. I think when you they are – the big rub on them is where are they going to find offense, right? They've got two fantastic goaltenders. They've got good, solid defense. You look at somebody like Vince Dunn. I mean, he is – you give him a chance here to really shine, get out from what he was able to – he was great in St. Louis, don't get me wrong. But, you know, here he's going to shoulder a lot more of it. Yanni Gourde is not starting the season. He's practicing now without a non-contact jersey, but he's not going to be back probably for the opener down with you guys either. He's going to be great at that number one center position. Right now they've got Jared McCann. I really like him. So they have depth. When I got a chance to talk to Dave Haxtell this morning, as you guys mentioned, he said that's how they're going to have to score. He said training camp they focused like 50%. He said our defense is good, but we had to work on our structure. And he said our big thing is keeping them to the outside. And he said, in moving the puck up, and then it's going to be scoring by committee. He's like, I think that it's going to be tough right now with COVID and everything we're dealing with to say that we're going to have four offensively challenging lines. But he said we have to have three. And, you know, you look at somebody like Morgan Geekie, a huge opportunity for him to break out in this lineup. He right now is playing probably third line center, maybe second line center, just with everything that's going on with COVID. Ryan Donato is still trying to find his place, but I know they were really impressed with the way that he played during preseason, scored a couple power play goals. So they have depth. You know, another Providence Friar there, Hal, they're Brandon Tanev. He's going to be, it'll be interesting.
Love him.
He brings a ton of
love him.
I know you do. All you Friars, you know, a ton of energy. And so they have the pieces. The question is the intangibles, right? What happens as they get going here? Do Jaden Schwartz and Jordan Eberle form a really good tandem on that top line, you know, whenever they get Gourde back or you know, tonight it's going to be Wennberg is going to be up there between them. So it's really going to be, can they replicate what Vegas did? Can they find that golden misfits where they just have that chip on their shoulder and they come into town and one or two people on the team is sort of mad at the team that let them go? I don't know. But I think it's going to be really fun to watch because now the other teams, like you guys, they're coming in Thursday night. You're not going to take them lightly. I think 4 or 5 years ago, everybody took Vegas a little bit lightly, A, because they were an expansion team, and B, you come into Vegas, and as Hal said, you're in Vegas. So teams maybe got bit by the Vegas flu a little bit.
So you want to take a look at a scary headshot. Go on hockeydb.com and type in the name Brandon Tanev. It looked like he was auditioning for a monster movie.
I think that's how all Providence College players take their headshots, right?
It's just intensity. It's intensity. That's what that is.
It? Okay, okay.
Or nonsensity in my case.
AJ, really appreciate the visit. Thank you so much for doing this. Best of luck this season with everything at ESPN. We'll certainly be watching your coverage. Thanks for doing this tonight. Enjoy the game tonight between Vegas and Seattle.
Hey, wait, AJ, have a great time tonight, but call the game first, okay?
And don't go deaf. Don't go deaf in that building either, AJ.
Yeah, earplugs in. It gets loud.
Well, good advice. I appreciate all of it. And Hal, that's probably good advice for you when you guys come to Vegas. I think I'm good. I got it covered. I appreciate you guys having me. It's really fun to catch up with you. I'm excited the season's getting going. And I do hope that I get a Preds game this year so I get to see you guys.
Maybe one of those two coming up in Vegas.
Hope so. Thanks for having me.
Be nice. Thanks, AJ.
Back here on the Predators season preview show here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Fun show. Darren McFarland, Pete Weber, Hal Gill. Great discussion there with AJ Malesko. Hey, Preds fans, don't forget Smashville Live returns to these airwaves tomorrow night. Keep that in mind during the 6 o'clock hour. Smashville Live, special guest, first show this season, Preds GM David Poile and head coach John Hines. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, Twitter, and thegamenashville.com. So keep that in mind. Smashville Live tomorrow night during the 6 o'clock hour. You know what? Let's talk about Roman Josi and the Norris. He's pretty darn good. We know. He's elite. We talked about kind of Carrier playing a lot. In fact, let me just start there real quick because we talked about Carrier. What do you – if you're a guy like Carrier – and you don't have the experience that Roman Josi does, and yet everybody's praising you for what you bring to the table. But Hal, what do you want to make sure you do when you play alongside a guy who most people around the league view him as one of the very best at the position you play?
I have specific experience with this. My first D partner when I came in the league was Ray Bourque, and it was one move. It was D to D. That was all I had to do. Just pass it over to Ray Bourque and let him go. And so if I'm Carrier, I know he's just as capable of skating up as most defensemen in the league. But Roman Josi is special, and I would rely on that. I would rely on his skating and set it up as much as possible. And then the other thing that Carrier can do is close gaps, and he can be aggressive because he knows he's got one of the most elite guys bailing him out. And, you know, I was Hal Standstill Gill, and Ray Bourque used to bail me out left and right. And it was, you know, talk about having a nice security blanket to play with. You know, if you have Roman Josi, who can recover from almost anything, it seems like, right? How many times have we seen Roman Josi go down below the goal line and then be in a defensive position on the way back? Yeah. And I don't know how he does it. It's remarkable, but that gives you confidence to be aggressive, playing offensively as well as defensively if you're Carrier. So I think he's done a great job of doing that. He's just got to continue to feed the beast, so to speak.
And Roman has an unusual, I would say, understanding of the situation, Hal, because of when he came in and stepped into the Preds, all of a sudden he was on the left side of Shea Weber.
Well, he started off with me, and then they said, wow, this kid's too good to play with Hal, so we got to put him up with Shea Weber.
I thought they said Hal was too good.
Yeah, he was. I mean, but talk about the regression, learning to play right next to Shea Weber, and then being able to do that. And now he's the guy that guys are looking at. It hasn't been that long either. I mean, in reality, he's come so far, and I feel like he just keeps getting better. You know, his shot has improved over the years, and I feel like he is understanding his role on the team and how to help the team win and become a better captain. And so, you know, I still think there's a lot of upside for Roman, and it's got to be fun to carry along Carrier right next to him.
We talked earlier about Roman Josi recognizing the skill set of Carrier and saying, man, years ago, you know, this guy is good. Did you know that right away? You know, all the time you had spent in the league, here's this young guy that a lot of people don't know. Did you look at him early on and go, holy crap, that kid's really good?
Yeah, usually you can tell by skating, right? If you got a guy that can skate like the wind, Roman was, you know, and he's still, he's gotten even more explosive as he's grown up, but, you know, he could go from full stride in about two steps, you know, and there's a lot of guys that takes a while to get going. He's just, that skating is so next level that you kind of knew it was going to come. It was just a matter of controlling and being able to hit his spots and figure it out. And that took a little time, but yeah, you could see it. And right when I got traded here, everyone was talking about it. And you know, when everyone's talking about it, then, you know, there's got to be something there.
Pete, you've seen a whole lot of really, really good defensemen come through here over the years. A lot of them are going to be in Toronto in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Where does Roman Josi stack up?
I hope they're getting the plaque ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, he will end up there.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Absolutely.
I mean, no doubt, right? I mean, him and Shea Weber and Suter, those guys right there, they're the cream of the crop. Are they not? Three best?
Yes.
Without a doubt. Seth Jones, you know, who knows what his career, but what it's going to look like when it's all said and done. All right, let's talk
just
about
a factory. I mean, when you talk about the Preds, it's just been a factory between Thiemann and Weber, Josi. I mean, like, and Ekholm, like the development that Ekholm has gone through is impressive too. It just, I don't, for whatever it is and how David Poile does it, he just cranks out great defensemen.
He did the same thing in Washington too. If you look down that roster of D-men.
Yeah, they had some good ones, that's for sure.
Do you think the league has figured out Ekholm? Do you think he gets the credit he deserves?
Oh, I think people know. You saw the trade buzz, and it's going to be interesting this year. How long is it going to be before people start getting itchy around what is going to happen with him? A contract year? I think he wants to stay here and be the big dog and win some cups here. I think that's his end game, is his goal. But as the season goes on, we'll see how it goes, because I know he's expecting a big year, as the Preds are. And is he going to get his money after that? We'll see.
What is it like playing like that when you know there's so much on the line for the next contract and it's not signed and you're a human being and you still have to think about it? You still may discuss it privately, or you will discuss it privately. You may not want to discuss it publicly. But what's that like as a player?
It's sickening, because you have to write these checks out for insurance. you want to ensure that you're going to get paid. So you pay a bunch of money up front, and it makes you want to vomit. But you're going out there, and in the end, you can worry about it all you want. And I did that my first year. I was like, how's this going to play out? What's going to happen? In the end, if you play well and you play your game, it takes care of itself, and you let your agent deal with it. Some guys handle it better than others, but I found I couldn't really worry about it, so I just put that in the back. Other than writing that check for disability insurance, that was the only thing that made me lift an eyebrow about. That was a tough one.
Pete, my vibe today with David is he definitely wants to get the Ekholm deal done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and we've read that Matias doesn't want to do it during the course of the season. So I guess sooner definitely is in the whole thought process of Matias Ekholm as well.
So does that spell big season for Forsberg and Ekholm, guys, in your opinion? Got a lot to play for.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think you put him and Forsberg in the same group. They got something to prove, and they want to get paid for it. So good for them. Let's see what they got.
And we've seen it in Predators history in the past. The two biggest years Scott Walker had were contract years.
Money tends to motivate, right? That's not a bad thing.
No.
That's the way you should always look at it if you're a franchise. If you get an unbelievable season out of them, that's ultimately what you want, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, you obviously want your cake and eat it too. You want the great season and then be able to sign them, but at least you're going to get that.
That's the way it was. I mean, for a long time, the best way to get paid is go year by year, and at least you get a 10% qualifying offer, and and hopefully you get a team that says, nope, we got to pay him or else he's going to leave. And so you do 1 year contracts over and over again, or 2 years at the most. And now it's kind of changed, hasn't it? I mean, now you're looking at everyone, hey, you know, I'm 22 years old. Give me 7 years or give me 8 years and they'll take it. So it's a different thing, but there's something to be said for fighting for your own livelihood on 1 year. That's a tough one. That'll get the best out of you.
Let's be Gordon Gekko here. Greed is good.
Yeah, there you go. Nice quote. We were talking about this with AJ. What do you guys see out as, you know, as we get close to wrapping this up, the lay of the land in the West? I think everybody is going to obviously point directly at Colorado and Vegas as the two top dogs in the West. What else do you see? What else stands out to you guys in the Western Conference?
Wow. California's in bad shape.
Not high on the Ducks and the Kings.
It's going to be a different year, right? Now everyone's back to playing everyone, so it's going to be fun. But it's like you look at the Central Division, man. It's tough. I mean, the Preds are. There's no easy wins there. I mean, is Arizona going to be the dog that everyone thinks? And then everyone's picking Nashville to be right around where they are.
Yeah,
I think Nashville is going to surprise some people, but I think, you know, Colorado's the cream of the crop. I think you look through the West, and everything points to Colorado as being the big one. I think Chicago is going to be impressive. It's going to be fun to watch. Minnesota has gone through so many changes.
Ooh, have they ever?
And Bill Guerin has done a great job of cutting ties with what we used to be in Minnesota. You know, St. Louis, Winnipeg, we always see huge battles against them. I just think the wear and tear from going from last year is going to be a whole different ball game for these guys you know, you were going and staying for two games in one city.
Yes.
And then you're going, you're coming home and staying for four games. You know, like, it's a different schedule now. It's going to be long and hard, and there's no easy games. So I don't know how this is going to play out, but I can tell you it's going to be grueling for these guys.
And how do they come back after the long Olympic and All-Star break in February?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they don't play very many games in that month.
Three for the Predators.
Yeah. I think when I look at the Central, it kind of, when we were talking earlier about that third line, we just don't really know yet what that third line is going to look like. Glass, Tomasino, Cousins. Just because Cousins is the only one we've seen, right? Tomasino and Glass, we don't know what it, I view a lot of these teams like, I don't really know what Winnipeg is. I don't know what St. Louis is. I don't know what Dallas is. I think you're right. Hal, I think Chicago's going to be better. I think Arizona's going to be the worst team in. What is Minnesota? There's just a lot of unknown with me, you know, and the Predators. How truly this is, it's like Colorado, I think I feel safe going, okay, locking it in at one. Arizona, I feel pretty safe locking it in at the bottom at eight. But I'm not sure what 2 and 7 is going to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the conundrum.
I'm right with you.
I guess that's why they play the
but
season,
but I tell you
right?
what, I tell you what, Nationals, the Preds, you know, my first year of working, 2017-18 season, I remember looking around going, wow, these guys just, they don't even have to try, and they find ways to win. You know, it was a good thing that they had going, but then it came down to playoff time, and it became harder, right? I mean, that's when you had to battle, you had to have your battle level. I think this team is going to be battle tested. They're going to have to battle to win, and it'll pay off down the road if they can get there. You know, when a playoffs time comes around, they're going to be a team that battles to win. It's going to be a hard road, and it's going to be tough and physical, and it's going to be challenging to battle every night, but they need to do that to win, especially in the Central Division.
Guys, it's an honor and a pleasure working alongside you during the Predators season. Looking forward to another season, and it all begins Thursday night. I'm excited. Hope you're excited. I know you are. And let's get ready for another incredible hockey season. Thanks for doing this tonight.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you very much, Darren.
Darren, you deserve a shake. Go get one, bud. Thanks.
I will do that.
He deserves
Skillsy,
five.
I'll beat you in the middle. How about that? We'll do in the middle. For Pete Weber and Hal Gill, that is a great way to wrap this up. You've been listening to the Predators Season Preview Show. We look forward to talking to you Thursday night. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. We'll see you then.